People ask some rather specific questions. Okay, I need you on this one. We have permission to do this resist. We have permission to do this resist. Am I okay?
Yes.
Okay. Most of the great teachers of recent times, very well known, some American, most of they teach in the high, they usually get in the high 500s. The ideal level for a teacher would be, the high 500s, it would be the perfect level. First of all, lower, you don't have enough power for the power of your words to go through the ego's resistances. Beyond 600, you're not very useful. You're not useful in the world. Beyond 590, you're not very useful in the world. You can sit there and bless people as they walk by in a bliss state. That's about all you can do. And I recommend that you continue doing that. If you get blissed out sitting on a rock, stay there. I'll tell you what pulls you out of those high 500 states is love. Because you have a love relationship that would be impacted by you sitting on the rocks out of your love. So that's an attachment to love. Love itself, it was perfected, you'd sit on the rock. Okay. So a lot of the famous teachers, you know, we call them saints. The one who was recently canonized by the Vatican, Father Pio. Yeah, Father Pio. I don't speak Latin. Father Pio. Anyway, yes. It's probably 580, 590. He's very evolved. Very high 500s. So those are the great teachers, really are the high 500s. Yogananda. The Pope is at 570. The Dalai Lama is at 570. To run a huge worldwide church, you can't be much beyond 570 and still do it. See, so each one is perfect for that which he is. If you want to be the great beneficence, let's say the current Pope, the image he images, is for you people to get together and share your love and brotherhood and Christianity with each other. He's a great peacemaker. All right, so to run a great church, you should be in the high 500, 570. Saints are really 570 to 590, 595. So we would expect saint-like people. Kriya Yoga, I forget Kriya Yoga, I think it's in the 400s, is the word 520, 530, 540, 540. Kriya Yoga is 540, all right. So let's understand what the calibrations mean. What the calibration means is each technique is for a purpose and appeals to you at a certain time, and therefore it's perfect. To choose a technique that calibrates at 800 when you're at 300 is not going to work. If you're at 350, I would choose one about 380, 400, or a teacher 420, because you're still getting the basics. It's important to get the basics. And so it's not that 600 is better than. It's not better than. It's different than. See, it's different than. So we learn the basic skills. So your best teacher would be somebody who appeals to you, that you can bond with, who's meaningful to you, with whom you feel a certain compatibility. So that's the best teacher. The style that somebody of a much higher calibration has may not appeal to you at all, you see? So I would choose that which you feel compatible with. What you want to know is it integrous. And the exact calibration doesn't mean anything. Why? Because you can take a simple technique, any simple concept or technique, and if you follow it relentlessly without one single omission, never once are you allowed to, if you follow kindness towards yourself and all living things, no matter what, without exception, with a fixity of purpose, that'll take you the whole way. You understand? So it isn't so much the calibration of the teaching as the degree to which one commits to it. easy does it, live and let live, first things first. Those are very powerful. You put those into operation, you're going to be at, what is the 12-step work? They're 540, are they? What did I say they were?
540,
yeah. All right, so even the 12 steps of the 12-step programs, if you follow that relentlessly, you're looking at 540, which is unconditional love. So, unconditional love is somebody can rip you off for $20,000 and that was yesterday. What did he do to me today? Nothing. Unconditional love means no matter what happens. But there at 540, you see the vulnerability for that which is non-integrous to come into your life. And so although you have the capacity to forgive the beheadsman, you know, as your head is there, you're praying for the guy who shouldn't feel guilty chopping your head off. That's 540. That's what I do. Goes to chop my head off. I pray for the guy. Fact. Okay, so the willingness to forgive the headsman, then, is coming from the heart, and it's the fulfillment of the choice to be loving towards all things, no matter what. You see, it doesn't mean you got to forgive everybody, but the headsman you're going to hate, or Hitler you're going to hate. Somebody, you're going to make an exception. You cannot make any exception. So it isn't how high the teacher is or the teaching is, but your commitment to it, because what gives it is power. Its power has several sources. One is your level of commitment to it. I'm sure in India to turn the prayer bells relentlessly day after day after day may seem ridiculous to a Western mind. But think of the degree of commitment. And you have to give money to the church to do this too, you know, put your money in there to crank the bells and the prayer bells. We'd say, well, that's ridiculous, you know, cranking prayer bells. I mean, does God hear prayer bells clanking up there in heaven and give you merit? But think of the amount of dedication to that, then, because, so anything can be your way to God. Anything can be your way to God. So it isn't. So the technique tells you where it fits into an overall scheme of things, but it doesn't tell you how beneficial it would be to you. I already told you the truth when you came in here, and none of you got enlightened that instant, did you? I told you there's nothing happening, nobody here, and nothing's being said, and there's no mind to hear it or speak it. I already told you that. That's 1999. That's the truth. That's fact. Knowing that is no help, is it? If anything makes you feel worse, you know what I'm saying? It makes you feel worse. could we live an intense, live through intense constant pain of physicality when we are in the 600s? Well, you can live through constant pain. Physical pain is a thing that comes up very often, and physical pain takes you through all kinds of learning processes. It takes you through alternate treatment methods. It takes you through acupuncture. It takes you through hypnosis. It takes you through mantras and physicalities and prayings and all kinds of things. And learning how to disregard it. Learning how to disregard it. See, suffering is one thing, pain is another. That's what's really being asked. There's pain, but once you let go resisting pain, I told you how to let go suffering from pain, right? Remember? Yeah. I'll go through it once again. But suffering is one thing and pain is another. When the suffering leaves the pain, you ignore the pain because you're not suffering from it anymore. You understand? Suffering means you haven't processed it out. You're resisting it. Physical pain, one lets go resisting it, stop running away from it, trying to avoid it, stop trying to control it. If you do that, the pain goes from local to diffuse. You can feel like your whole aura, the pain from your twisted ankle now is everywhere around you. You keep surrendering to it and let go resisting to it. You can't resist for even a split second or you feel the pain again. You let go resisting it continuously. Within a matter of minutes, it fades out and you get up and walk away. Nothing to it. It's just the willingness to do that and to get through excruciating pain. You can't relent for even a split second or the pain overwhelms you, shocks you, almost pass out from it. So that's what you do. You let go resisting. So pain is one thing, suffering is another. Anybody who's been in pain and had a narcotic remembers that. They give you a shot of morphine. The gallbladder, the pain is still there, but you're not suffering from it. Because you're in a different space. You are what you are, and the pain is what it is, but you are not the pain. So that's what morphine does for you. It doesn't eliminate the pain. You say, is the pain there? Yeah, it's still there. But you're not suffering from it. So suffering is one thing, pain is another. There's an infinite number of dimensions. We said that this really takes us into advanced theoretical physics and quantum theory to really comprehend. At every instant, an infinite number of potentialities is, you might say, becomes actualizable, becomes I can't say it. At every instant, there is released an infinite number of potentialities. Each of those potentialities, in turn, releases an infinite number of potentialities, which in turn releases an infinite number of potentialities. There is, therefore, at all times, an infinite number of dimensions, an infinite number of dimensions. We have permission to ask that at this time, resist. There is an infinite number of dimensions, resist, and they are expanding at an infinite rate, resist. That is beyond the human imagination to comprehend. At every instant, an infinite number of potentialities are releasing an infinite number of potentialities, which each in turn releases another infinite series of potentialities. If I send out 10,000 sparks, each spark can send out 10,000 more, of which each spark can create 10,000 more, and it happens at the speed of light. I see something beyond the speed of light, but I don't want to ask about it. It happens beyond the speed of light, resist. Yes. Yeah, because we're only talking, this is within the physical domain. There's an infinite number of, you see, and theoretical physics, astronomy is discovering there's an infinite number of galaxies with an infinite number of planetary systems. You know. Infinite number of galaxies, and the galaxies are expanding fast, you know, at the speed of light, but there are dimensions beyond the speed of light which expand and multiply beyond the speed of light. That ought to give those neurons something to do. Just to think it has knocked me out of my chops here. Yeah. And you hear people thinking they're greater than God. I think, yes, right, uh-huh. An infinite number of dimensions is expanding it faster than the speed of light, and an infinite number, and you're bigger and more powerful than that. Okay, Ben. Just thanks for that suggestion, but. What can you do if you break into tears in the presence of beauty? Get a box of Kleenex is what I think. That's that point that you reach in spiritual evolution where the innocence, the beauty, and the holiness of everything knocks you out of the box. And it's true, it's difficult. That's why we say a world religious leader can't really handle it at 580 or 590. Because at 580 or 590, you break into tears over everything. The beauty of the pattern of the rug. The magnificence of every animal. Every animal that walks by knocks you out. This morning I'm looking for Kitty and there's a raccoon. Just as adorable as it could be on the edge of the tree. whoa. I mean, they cocooned that me out, you know what I'm saying? He didn't care I was there. He sort of went into a swoon, sort of. Just like the deer do when we talk about the deer. We talked about the deer last time, didn't we? You see, the deer, the animal gets how much you love it. And it does not mean you can put your head in its mouth. Because it may just love you so much it could just eat you up. You know? And so you don't want to tempt it. You don't want to tempt it and push its love beyond its capacity. All right, so the high 500s then are the realm of the great teachers. Their intention is integrous. Their wish is to energize the capacity to love in everyone, to share their insights so that people can overcome the obstacles to that lovingness. And if everybody gets to 540, you've got no worry, I'll tell you. 500 and above, you got no worry. That's right. 500 and over, you got no worries. Because that which is loving gravitates into, as it leaves the body, that which is compatible with that lovingness. It is not attracted to that which is down there. It is attracted to beauty. You find in your own life, as people get more evolved, they tend to seek more and more rural areas, less and less noise, less and less activity. Very often life comes to a complete stop. The person says, I'm not doing anything in the eyes of the world. And I think, fantastic. Because that being run by doingness, you know, is genuflecting at the knee of the doer within you. The doer is very useful. The doer will take you out of apathy, up through the solar plexus, into rajas, into high rajas, and then eventually you go into tranquility and sattva, and at that point, doingness is no longer a necessity. Also, there's the discovery that there is no doer doing anything. Doingness is happening of its own. So you neither take credit for it, nor do you blame yourself for it. There is no thinker behind the thinkingness. The thinkingness is thinking itself. The doingness is, the action is activating itself. And you see that the actions of the body are like a karmic wind-up toy. It's all set to do that. There's no one to take credit for it, or discredit. The illusion that there is, you see, that's the source of the belief in causality, that there is a something, a some person, a who, that is secretly controlling all of this. This is the old homunculus sitting in the back of your brain, pulling all the switches. And there is an operations center within the ego that integrates an enormously complex series of functions. And I talk about it, I forget, I the I or I forget which. There is this operations center where when you look at what the human mind is asked to do, it's no computer could come anywhere near it. Millions of multiple options decided, you know, chosen in pathways from instant to instant, all within a feeling that's complex because all decisions, thoughts, and feelings are also filed in the memory file according to feeling tone. The complexity is mind-boggling. Together with unconscious factors, together with energies within the field of which you have no knowingness, together with enormous complexity of programs coming from past karmic momentum, no computer could even get near it. Could not get near it because it's not within the realm of logic. Because the entire field shifts every time context shifts in the slightest. The whole field shifts, and nothing that you're even into is even applicable. The minute the field shifts a little bit, it's all nonsensical. That's the purpose of humor. Never trust anybody who doesn't have a sense of humor. They're dangerous. They're killers. All killers are humorless. We just stepped on a scorpion in the back. we were talking about, is there death? And there was this big scorpion, which now, to me, was non-integrous, because if you get a scorpion sting on the tail, it can be fatal, you know what I'm saying? Okay. That was integrous. The scorpion is dead, resist. This scorpion is dead. Scorpion-ness is dead, resist. I get what it was. All right. Okay. Okay. It came right out of the lecture, right? Okay. All right. So, the decisions that we make, the intention behind them is what sets the karmic energy field going. The same action out of revenge or hatred has a different karmic consequence than, let's say, to protect one's integrity. To kill out of anger, fear, revenge, or greed is a totally different act than defending one's homeland, let's say, which you have no choice. You have a wife and a family and children, and the Huns are coming over the horizon with their scimitars flashing, and they always kill everybody they conquer. That was tradition in the great hordes of history. They always killed everybody. You massacred all of them, and you took the loot. And that's why slavery was an advance in consciousness, because suddenly humans had a value. Hey, we won't kill them, we'll sell them. So whether slavery is one way or slavery is the other depends on which direction you look at it. As we said in the last lecture, a slave in the South of America lived to be 56 years old, and a slave left in the wild of Africa, where the fellow tribes would kill you, probably lived about age 28. So your life was preserved. You got medical help, you got nutrition, you got clothing, you got food, you got the necessities of life, instead of being massacred, you understand? So you see how everything shifts depending on perception, whether you shift to the past and look at it towards the future, or project yourself into the future and look back at the past. That's why to save the world, when Ramana Maharshi is saying, is that all you could be working on is your illusion about your own perceptions. That no such thing exists. Is it an advance or is it a cruelty? It depends on how you look at it. To be a slave on a slave ship, on a galley, in a state of advanced agony was what? Horrible? Yeah, horrible. And then was taking the great chance. I could leave the body. I wasn't sure there was a spirit. I had to let go of that which is known. I am a physicality, with the intuitive suggestion, there was an intuition that one is a spirit. Shoo! Free. Free as a bird. So was being chained to a galley a horrible event, or was it the doorway to enlightenment? Because that was the first lifetime of discovery and conscious memory that one is actually a spirit. That which I am rose up out of the physicality, and they had to drag it away. Serves them right. So behind that which you think is a thinker, a thinkingness is a thinker. There is no thinker there, so you don't have to worry about the thinker because there isn't any. You just look at the thinking itself, and we try to transcend the blocks to enlightenment by understanding the nature of the construction of the ego. I think we've handled most of these now, and therefore. Okay, I thought we'd finish some other things I wanted to say. Okay, is there more questions before we go on, eh? Yes.
On a simplistic level, at least in language, we say, I pause this paper to go from here to here.
Yes.
So how does that
Well, this is something we have addressed in previous lectures, and we have addressed quite a bit in the books, a lot of attention given to it in the books. how the ego comes into being and how it gains its structure. The ego cannot discern the difference between an abstract concept and reality. That's why an abstract concept is one thing. It doesn't have any real concordant reality. That's really a parallel confirmation. This does not flow into this. This flows parallel to it. What was the question?
That in my perception, I'm causing this paper.
Oh, yes, causality. Yes, that question about has come up before. So we should go more into causality. The mind thinks in terms of abstractions, then thinks that if it can be nominalized, given a word, a name, therefore it has existence. We can call things transformation. We can call them all kinds of things. Is such a thing happening in reality? No, it's happening in my mind. This is an abstract conceptualization. One of the most difficult things about transcending the mind is transcending the belief that concepts represent an independent reality, some kind of an objective reality. If you go out there, no such thing exists out there. It doesn't exist. You can look all over the world and never find causality, because causality exists only as an abstract concept in your head. You'll just keep projecting that abstract concept over and over again to everything you see. All that means is you're projecting that thought, that argument, that concept onto the world over and over again. When I was younger, I always had a hard time with homesickness and leaving any place, and I would mourn it. Even if I lived in a cardboard box under a bridge that said Kleenex on it, camp out there for a couple of weeks, I would mourn it. I really missed my big Kleenex box. I had everything arranged in there just the way I wanted it, with the little windows and cardboard and all, you know. I had a stone fort as a kid, and then they came along and moved all the stones. They were going to make something with it. I mean, I always got attached to wherever I lived. Home. It was home. Home is where the heart is. So my heart would be wherever I lived. In the depths of not having money, which is you could call poverty nowadays, I suppose. In the depths of not really having any cash, you could live in some rather miserable places. And then when you left them, grieve all over again with homesickness for a little 1.5 room up on the roof of somebody's house. So it was so painful. It took me a long time it was just like homesickness. If you've ever been homesick, you know that feeling. So I learned that that was painful. So if I moved, I would rent a new place and I would pay the rent on the old place, so that I could move back there if I couldn't stand this homesickness. They ran on two places. If in a couple of months I couldn't stand it, I could always move back there. The knowingness that I could move back if I wanted eased the pain. Huh? This happened over and over again. Every place I left, I would go through this pain of loss, heartbreak, like losing a lover. You know, it was the homesickness of the child, for instance. So home was a very, very special place. And one time, here I am leaving this huge estate, you know, which was really spectacular, really a showplace in a way. And as I leave that, I realize I'm going to project that sense of at-homeness onto the next place I go. It's in me, not in it. Each place I lived, I projected the sense of home, safety, love, familiarity. It came from me. I'll do it all over again the rest of my life. If I have to move from where I am now, the next place will become special all over again, right? So soon as you move in, you fix it all up, and now it's special. It's got the magic touch of yourself there. So the feeling of being at home, comfort, secure, and all that goes with homeness, which derives from childhood, got projected onto every place that you live. You project it there. It's not there. If we take a microscope and we take a whatchamacallit meter and take every molecule of that home apart, you will not find feeling at homeness there. That's from here, you understand? The same with causality. Everything you see, because you see sequence in the world, you then, your mind jumps in and projects the concept, causality. This is causing that. This is causing that. In reality, what you see is the sequence of perception as this, you know, creation unfolds itself this way. You understand? So, there is nothing causing the hand to unfold. It has innate within it the potentiality. Then a person says, yes, but isn't there an I causing it by intention? Today's lecture has to do with how to transcend duality. That is duality per se, that there is an I causing an it through some magical modality called causality. And that is the trap of the mind, to believe in the reality of any of these three factors. First of all, there's nothing happening out there, nor is there causality, nor is there any intrinsic independent entity called I to be causing it. All things come into being by the unfoldment of the potentiality of creation, and as it is witnessed sequentially to perception, one thinks that this is causing that. If you take that one point of observation out of time and space, then there is no sequence to which you would be ascribing the magical quality called causality. If we back up the movie and you see the lady running backwards and you say, what's causing her to run backwards? Well, she's not running backwards. It's only perception, you see? You see that the concept happening in itself is an illusion. There is nothing happening. There's nothing happening now. There's nothing happening now. Something didn't happen a minute ago. Something is not about to happen now either. Why? All right. You have perception. Arbitrarily, I could say we start now and we end now. That's a happening. Or I could say, no, we'll start now and we'll keep going there. No, that's a happening. We could start 9 o'clock this morning to 4 o'clock this afternoon. Oh boy, that's a 7-hour happening. Well, we could start from 9 to 9:01. That was a happening. Oh, there was a happening. Did you catch it? Is your camera ready? Happening. 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 Now that was a happening. Yoko Ono used to specialize in happenings. A bonfire that would go off with rockets at midnight on in the East Village somewhere. She chose to start it there and end it there. No, I say the happening was when she set up the bonfire stuff, and the happening continued until after the police left. That was a happening. Now, a policeman would say, it began to happen after she ran this bonfire. We got there, caught him red-handed. That's the start of the happening to him. Then we took him off to jail. That's the end of the happening. And I booked her. That's the end of the happening. To the lawyer, that's only the start of the happening. She got taken out of jail. It's a violation of her civil rights. No. It started from there, and it's going on until right now, and I will defend her in court. She was only expressing this, the First Amendment, expressing her freedom to create. You understand? We project then this onto the world and say it's out there, whereas it's in here. You understand? There is no happening anywhere. There is no I, person, causing the happening. There is no causality to account for it. This arm has the potentiality to do that. Let's say if I choose a pattern off of an infinite number of patterns, if I choose this pattern, this automatically does this. Right? If I choose this pattern, it automatically does this. If I choose this pattern, it does this. A great moment in my life. So by choice, we release certain potentialities. By choice, but you see, within the seed is the whole program of it defining its potentiality in terms of non-linear potentiality. See, causality is looking within the Newtonian linear domain, which always sees a happening with a beginning, a cause, and an end, a consequence, and et cetera. That's a very limited paradigm of reality. It won't take you to the dimensions that you go to. Because the minute you get beyond logic, the 400s, these things are not even valid questions anymore. Once you get to the 500s and you're talking about love, you're talking about quality now, not measurable. Doesn't start here and end there. Can't package it. There isn't any love meter. It's beyond definition by logic. The person says, yes, but I want love to fit into the comfortable box of thinkingness and logic. And so we make futile attempts. Poetry probably gets the closest. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. As a kid, I thought, boy, boys don't like poetry. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Give me a break. You know, 8-year-old boys loathe that kind of stuff, you know. So that which is seen as so beautiful and lovingness is the turnoff. Every 8-year-old says, waffle shit now. Women and girls like that crap, you know what I'm saying? See, so it doesn't even have any reality. See, it doesn't have any reality. Or he'd be forced to accept that it's beautiful and loving. No, he has choice. All right, so the minute we get beyond the confines of logic, which is based on definition, we're in a different domain. So what we're doing here is stretching epistemology. Another one of the ways to God is to follow epistemology to its final ferocious end. And you crash through from epistemology. How do we know, and how do we know that we know? You make a concept called causality. How do you know that you know what causality even is? It's just a word. It's just a tautology. Well, cause is anything you want to call it, isn't it? It's just T-A-U-T. The string is taut now. Cause is anything you want to call it. You could say love is the cause of these people behaving this way. Not the cause. It's the field. It's in that field that you're making certain choices that are really answerable in a way to the field of love, because that now is the context of truth and value. Outside of love, the world of business, we were talking about it during the break, business doesn't give a diddly about love. You're not even allowed to engage in love during lunch breaks. Much less on the premises, please. Touchy-feely is not, you know, cool in the business world. Being cool and logical is cool in the business world. All right, so the minute you get out of the dimension then, we need our scale of consciousness again. The minute we get out of the 400s, then causality becomes less and less meaningful. What does it mean up here? It doesn't mean anything in the field of love and joy and peace. It doesn't even come up as a credible possibility. Nothing is causing you to feel peace. In this room, there's absolute silence. Behind all the noise, there's absolute silence. Remove the noise, and there's nothing here but silence, correct? Nothing is causing the silence. Nothing is causing your existence. Everything is by free choice. Out of the unmanifest comes the manifest. Out of that, all things are created with the one single essential quality of existence. Within that existence, combined with form, you have an infinite series of potentialities. Nothing is causing it to happen. So if we put a seedling, a rose seedling, in the sun and give it water and fertilizer, the sun and the water and the fertilizer do not cause it to grow. The seed does not cause it to grow. It doesn't cause it. Cause, you see, is really within the world of force. The world of power here is different. From 200 down, we have the world of force, in which one thing forces something else. That's not cause, that's force. Cause, you'd have to be divine. These things are manifesting the choice of that as a potentiality. Built within the human is the capacity to begin to vibrate at the energy of the kitty's purr, the doggy's wagging tail. And those are often the first things we love. That's why we give children pets and the toys and the fuzzy, warm things, because they begin to grasp their capacity to lovingness, and then they get attached to that which they're loving, and they grieve and go into loss. And then they learn that they can recreate the same feeling about the next toy. And then they've transcended the attachment to love. The attachment to love, which also becomes a block. And we'll talk about that more or less next time. I just want you to see that causality is an illusion, a powerful illusion. It's the whole basis of the ego. That's why it's so powerful, and why it takes a lot of prayer and inner spiritual work to transcend it. All of a sudden you see that everything is happening of its own. Nothing is causing anything to happen. The world of phenomena, the universe of creation, is like a giant electromagnetic field. All things within it have a certain charge, a certain energy, a certain polarity, like little iron filings with a north pole and a south pole and a certain spin and a certain degree of magnetic energy composed of various elements. And where it is in the space with billions and billions of others automatically allows it to move within the realm of possibilities, like the aurora borealis. You see the aurora borealis? There's nobody's causing it to do what it's doing. The poles of the earth send out that electromagnetic, and you see, everybody's here seeing the aurora borealis? You see how they dance, the pattern dances itself spontaneously as an interaction between that which it is and the universe in which it is located. Nothing is causing anything to happen. We spend some time on causality because it is so intrinsic to the structure of the ego. To merely begin to question causality as some kind of an intrinsic reality already weakens its power in holding the ego together. It's already weakened just by questioning its authenticity. It has no objective, substantive reality of its own. The only reality that can be confirmed is a subjective state called I. The presence of God within oneself, the self with a capital S, which illuminates itself into your awareness as the feelingness that there is an I and that I exist, that's the only reality you actually know. Beyond that is all imagination. Other than that you exist, there is no confirmable knowledge that you can possibly hold. Everything else then is a hypothetical possibility. Every piece of data the mind holds is a hypothetical abstraction. The only verification of reality then is the state of subjectivity. The only radically objective truth then is subjectivity itself. Without the subjective, no objective could be said to exist, because what would say that it exists? Only the subjective sense of self says an objective reality is out there. All conclusions, all mentations then are distilled down to a radical sense of subjectivity, which is the only reality that can exist. The presence of God within shines forth as self, that which I am. And that's the only thing you know, is that you exist. All the rest is software put on top of your hardware. Other than the fact that you exist, nothing else is really knowable. And all the great imaginations that all the great egos through all of time have arrived at, if you calibrate the great books of the Western world, all the greatest thinkers of all time, which I have in a library at home, these are the greatest thinkers of all time, lined up from ancient Greece. The last one in the series, I think, is called Freud. And they calibrated 475. The greatest thinkingness in the history of the world calibrates at 475. The greatest geniuses that have ever lived, Einstein and Newton, are 499. You're looking for a reality that's in the 500s and up. So I'm saying, don't look over here, because the world of reason and logic is not where you're going to find what you're looking for. Only the power of love can transport you. And in the nonlinear domain, it's obvious what's obvious. No proof is necessary. It would be extraneous. It would have no validity. The nearest thing you can get to it from the world of logic is quantum mechanics and the infinite quantum potentiality, where you realize that consciousness alone, just by observing something, totally changes its physical expression, is the closest we can get to where logic and the linear and the nonlinear domains meet. That's as far as reason and logic can go, is quantum mechanics, and that is the end of that box. And then you have to jump to a different paradigm. So you realize that each of these is a different paradigm of reality. What's real in this paradigm is not real in this paradigm. The people in this paradigm laugh at this paradigm. You gave all that up for love? You must be nuts. All that money, all that position, all that property? Boy, for love. For love of God, that's even more outrageous. You gave it up for love of God. All right, so reason and logic can only take us so far. It cannot really undo causality. Causality, we said, to transcend it is at about 998 or something like that. You almost have to be completely and fully enlightened to see beyond it. But to begin to doubt it already, what we're trying to do is lessen its hold on your ego. As you begin to question it, the ego weakens. And the next session is devoted to the way of the heart. And by that time, the ego is already somewhat rickety. If you've stayed awake through any of these lectures, it's become ricketized and should fall with just a few kisses. I love you, old ego. Good old ego got me through kindergarten and all everywhere, you know. Oh, you said goodbye to poor old ego. I said goodbye to the body a lot of times. That was sad. But saying goodbye to the mind, oh. Do I have to do that? Ah. It would be sad if it was real and had a reality and it was a loss, but it's not a reality. And it's not a loss, it's a gain. So everything you let go of as far as fallacious belief system is a freedom. All right, so the way to the higher spiritual states is a way of progressive freedom. You see that the belief in causality is like a chain holding you down. You're imprisoned by a belief system. So we're trying to weaken these belief systems and allow the butterfly within you to fly out. And as an 8-year-old boy, I think that's a disgusting analogy. Butterflies, why do I want to be a butterfly? All right, so I think that will conclude the answers and questions for this afternoon. And I thank you all for being here. It's a great joy, a great honor. I love you very much. I forgot what it was before.
445.
Eh?
445.
It was? Wow, this is a very advanced group. We have permission to resist. We're over 445, 446, 447, 448, 449, 450, 451, 452, 452, 445 to 452. 7 points?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That's an enormous jump. We're talking about a logarithm. 470. What do we say?
445 to 450.
All right. So when we started, it was 10 times 10 times 10, 455 times. Now it's 10 times 10 times 10, 452. Yeah, all right, so now it's 10 times 10, 452. So you'd have to see 452 tens all across the board and multiply them all against the other. And that's how much we jumped. So we jumped 7 times 10, 10 to the 7th power. So anyway, the field supports that advancement of consciousness. The field supports it. And of course, what makes the field possible is your intention. You know, there's an enormous amount of spiritual power in this room. And you put it all together, and the buoyancy is enough to take us all the way. Here we come. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. So, okay. Thank you very much again. 445 to 451 or 52? 452.